You are listening to the Fresh Take Network.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen and F1 fans. Welcome to round five of the Formula One 2022 season. This is the Miami Grand Prix. My name is Kelsey, and this is F101. It's Mother's Day, and it is race day, but first, we got some hot topics to cover before we get to the race. I'm sure everyone has seen this. Very exciting, a little bit further down the road, but Audi and Porsche have officially entered into the Formula One conversation. We're looking at them entering in 2026. I'm excited for this. Excuse me, Volkswagen. I mean, they both own Audi. They own Audi. They own Porsche. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be very interesting to see what they get into. Porsche has essentially crossed the T's, dotted the I's. They're going to be hanging out and collaborating with Red Bull. Now, in what capacity? We don't really know yet. All we know is that Porsche is going to be with Red Bull. Are they going to be doing the powertrain? Are they going to be doing the new chassis? I mean, what kind of technology are they bringing to the fold? What kind of research are they going to be helping Red Bull with? On the other side, Audi, not so concrete on who they're hanging out with. They're talking with Aston Martin. They're also talking with McLaren. That's going to be really, really interesting as well because, again, we don't know what they're bringing to the table. Are they bringing technology? Are they just bringing sponsorship? Do they want to spin this off into their own independent racing team? You know what? Nobody knows, but, I mean, it's kind of interesting to see why they want to get into it. The Porsche, you know, rep said, if you want to get into the business, if you want to make a big splash outside of, you know, regular car use, you go to Formula One. That's where the money is. That's where the pride and prestige is. So I'm very excited to see them come in, to see what they're going to add, to see, you know, maybe we get a couple more cars. Maybe the grid gets a little bit bigger, new colors, you know, who knows? Both teams are making an investment of $550 million each, not together, each. I mean, Volkswagen's putting in over $1 billion to put two car dealerships, two car brands that they own into Formula One. Is it going to work out? I mean, who knows? You tell me. What do you guys think? Is this a proper investment for Volkswagen? Is it going to affect the kind of racing that we're going to see? Is it going to help? Is it going to hinder? You guys let me know. 2 days after the announcement that Audi's in there, all of a sudden, Lawrence Stroll, the owner of the Aston Martin Formula One team, he's looking to sell his ownership in the actual team. It sounds like he's a little tired of losing and not winning the championships that he wants, that he desires. So it's kind of fortuitous timing. It's a little interesting. Maybe he knew a few things before everybody else, but we're going to see what happens with there. And when Volkswagen comes in 2026, it would not surprise me if all of a sudden we have another power unit supplier. I mean, we've got Ferrari, we've got Mercedes, Red Bull now. Renault's still hanging in there. They're supplying Alpine by themselves. It wouldn't surprise me if all of a sudden we see Volkswagen come in. They're the new power unit provider. And all of a sudden Renault doesn't exist anymore. They don't supply anybody anymore. Or maybe Mercedes takes a step back so they save themselves some money and they rely on Volkswagen technology. You know, who knows? We're going to see what we get. We're going to see, you know, what kind of spectacular things come down the pipeline. We're a few years out. But, I mean, in meantime, maybe they can get some few regulations and rules out of the way, get them clarified so, you know, drivers know what to expect. And, yeah, you know, thinking of that, expecting that, the FIA has announced that there's going to be new qualifying format for 2023 again. They're changing the rules again, and I think Pirelli maybe definitely has something to do with this one. Starting next year in a few qualifying races, not necessarily every single one, but they're going to try it out. The teams are now required to go through all three compounds. So qualifying one, you have to use the hard tires. If you make it to qualifying two, you have to use the medium tires. If you make it to qualifying three, you have to use the soft tires. I don't see a point in this except for Pirelli's not getting the information they need from the rest of their tire compounds because nobody uses them. Nobody needs to use them. Maybe they're losing money. Maybe the Formula One teams have to pay more money to Pirelli for the more tires they use. I don't know. I don't see a point in this. I just see them, you know, no pun intended, spinning their wheels just to use up tires. Just to say that we go through all three qualifying and that we're learning, you know, X amount of information when you really don't need them because nobody uses them and nobody cares. I just see this as a cash grab for Pirelli. Or at the same time, I think Pirelli might be a little concerned that they don't have enough information for the new cars and for different types of, you know, weather performance that maybe they might be in danger of losing their future contracts for Formula One. I mean, there are different tire suppliers out there. You've got NASCAR, you've got Indy, you've got the electric racing circuits. They don't all use Pirelli. There are different companies out there that have, you know, decades of information. I don't think it would be that far of a stretch to say that maybe Goodyear or one of those other big North American companies can or would come in and give Pirelli a run for their money. Maybe you might see a couple of tires being tested on different teams in the next coming years, but I just think it's a waste of money. It's a waste of rubber, and it will handcuff teams that don't necessarily perform better on hards or they don't necessarily perform well on mediums. And it's definitely weather dependent. If you have a cooler Q3 than you do a Q1, why would you want to run a tire that's not going to perform as well? Or maybe let's say you get rain halfway through, so you have to use the intermediates, but then you have to use softs when it dries out. You don't have enough information on the track temp. You don't have enough practice on the certain compounds. It doesn't make sense to me, but we'll see what happens in 2023. We'll see what teams love it, what teams don't, and we may see some changes in who actually qualifies higher than, you know, other teams. It might be an equalizer. You never know until we see it. Following up on more FIA rule, new rule enforcement. It's not a new rule, but it's a new enforcement. You may have seen this on social media. A massive, what I'm calling a brouhaha, and essentially a gigantic pissing contest, essentially between Lewis Hamilton and the FIA over jewelry. So there is a jewelry enforcement rule, Appendix L in the FIA International Sporting Code, stating that no driver is allowed to wear any sort of personal or body jewelry at all under safety, we'll call them reasons in massive air quotations, that if they get hurt, if they get burnt, that body piercings could prevent medical personnel from assisting the driver personally. They can cause more harm if you get burnt, so on and so forth. This rule has been around for a while, like I said, but it's only been reinforced by some of the new race directors, especially Niles Wittich. I think I'm pronouncing his name properly. Australia Grand Prix, he decided to bring this rule back into circulation, we'll call it. And it's, man, these guys are adults. They're not little kids. They know what they're doing. It's not like, oh, somebody told me to and I have to. They're making their own decisions, especially Lewis Hamilton. He's been around the block, no pun intended, so many times. The only jewelry that he has on when he's racing is a stud in his nose, and I believe it's two small hoops, all three of which, from my understanding, need to be surgically removed. They're permanently there, and he has stated that he doesn't wear any other type of jewelry. It's just those three, and they need to be surgically removed. So what's the harm in that? It doesn't affect his race. It's, in my opinion, it's not a safety hazard. It's really not. You're under a fireproof balaclava. His face is underneath a helmet. I mean, he's fine. It doesn't affect him. It doesn't give him an advantage. It doesn't give him a disadvantage. It's personal expression, and I think the FIA just needs to leave it alone. But when asked for the reason for it. The FIA gave this quote, and I quote, "The wearing of jewelry in the form of body piercings or metal neck chain is prohibited during the competition and may therefore be checked before races." So the FIA has also reserved the right to do any kind of spot checks before or after the racing. Now, they haven't specified if you get caught with jewelry at the end of race, you win the race, let's say, that you will lose the race or you're going to lose points or anything along that line. Right now, it just sounds like it's a financial fine that escalates per piercing per time. So, I mean, that can add up ridiculously fast. I believe I saw an article that said the math that if Lewis Hamilton right now gets dinged for two races in a row with having the amount of facial jewelry that he has, it will be the equivalent of $250,000 fine. I think it's just a cash grab from the FIA at this point. Like I said, these guys are adults. Let them express what they want to do, how they want to express themselves. It's not affecting anything. I think the FIA just really needs to fuck right off and just leave these guys alone. Their job is dangerous enough, it is. They're making the FIA millions, if not billions of dollars every year. Just let them do what they want to do. Lewis Hamilton, being the social media pro that he is, on the press conference after the Australian Grand Prix, after the rules were, you know, reinforced or reinstated, I should say, he showed up to the press conference wearing 3 watches, 5 chains, and 10 rings. One ring on every single finger as essentially a protest to these stupid rules that they're now enforcing after how many years of just ignoring them. I think it's a great job by him to make a point of it, going, we have our own personalities. Let us just be us and just let us go. Let us go from there. Just let us race. This is what it should be about. The FIA did not back down to this little protest, and they have given Lewis Hamilton a 2-race reprieve to get the jewelry surgically removed or to change his jewelry so it can be removed before races. So 2 races from now, we're really going to see what happens. If he's going to get that fine, if he's not, I think it's just a staring contest. I don't think that anyone's really going to start throwing massive fines around. The FIA can take away grid spots if you qualify 7th and then you get caught with jewelry. They can bump you down to, you know, 9th or 10th or whatever they seem necessary. There's no scale on how many points or how many grid points they'll take away from you. Right now, it's just an arbitrary blanket statement. And I mean, if anyone's going to challenge them on what they're actually going to do, I mean, I put my money on Lewis Hamilton 9 times out of 10. So we'll go from there. The next rule after that, again, it's underneath, it's for fireproof clothing. This one to me makes a little bit more sense, but not that much. So the rule states that you have to have fireproof clothing underneath your fireproof suit. So fireproof balaclava. They do wear fire-resistant shirts, socks, their boots, their gloves. But the main issue on this one is fireproof underwear. Yeah. We're talking about guys' underwear in this episode. Again, they're not 12. They're not little kids. They know what they're doing. They know what makes them comfortable to perform the best. And they know the risks that they're taking if they don't wear some of the proper clothing, safety requirements as well. Sebastian Vettel did it the best. Press conference and free practice on Friday. He wore his regular boxers on the outside of his race uniform as his version of a silent protest on how dumb this rule is. And I highly agree with them. It's some guys will go commando because the underwear is not comfortable. It bunches, it scratches. Yes, it is for safety. But in my opinion, if the thing you're complaining about is fireproof underwear, that's not going to save your life. If it comes down to fireproof underwear, you've got so many other layers and so many other safety features to save a driver from fire, being if they're stuck in the car, if it's trackside fire, whatever the case may be. Fireproof underwear is not going to save your life, right? So again, it's an older rule. It's nothing new. It's just it was never enforced by former racing directors because they had better shit to do. They had other safety protocols that they wanted to make sure got right, like the halos on the car or the structures of the car themselves, like things that will actually save someone's life, not what type of underwear they wear. Like, are they going to, they're going to check underwear before the races? It's getting ridiculous. The politics are starting to creep in just a little bit. I understand the new race directors want to make their mark. They want to make things safer. But it's like you get that new manager at your job, or, you know, you run into that one person who thinks they're way more important than they are, and they just start giving you pointless facts and make you do dumb shit that you haven't done in years that doesn't affect anything in the best way possible. It just makes people mad, and just, you're going to ignore them after a while. Fines and grid points will also follow for violating the fireproof clothing rule as well. So again, it'll be interesting to see who actually gets fined, what they'll actually do about all of this. But I think it's just, at this point, it's the new race directors just trying to flex their muscle, going, hey, look at us, we're super important, you have to do what we say. And the driver's going, we've worn jewelry for how many years without anybody caring? We've worn our own preferred underwear, fireproof or not, without anybody caring, without anybody getting hurt. Like, I mean, Grosjean wore his own underwear when he had that massive crash a couple years ago and that massive fire, and he was perfectly fine. So why change it now? The last thing on the Hot Topics schedule today, and I think it's one of the more important ones, is the actual track in Miami. Brand new track, hasn't really been tested before. Hot Miami weather, you would think that it would be able to withstand the wear and tear of Formula One cars. Miami's a massive race city. They know they're racing. They know their tracks. It's been proven over the years, but slightly concerning about this track this time. I mean, it's Formula One. You're on the world stage. You want to get this right. I understand that. There's massive pressure. I understand that as well. But on the big stage, you got to perform. And from all the articles that I've read, from the interviews that I've seen from the drivers, this track was definitely one of the worst first-time tracks that some of these drivers have ever driven. For example, this comes from GP Fans, that Sebastian Vettel and Martin Brundle were filming a feature for Sky Sports 1, and they're seen picking gravel out of the tarmac. Like, not like digging shovels, kicking the tarmac. We're talking like putting your hand down, running it over the top, and you're picking out pieces of gravel from the tarmac. I'm sorry, if you've got, you know, over $100 million worth of technology, 20 drivers, the world watching, you do not want to be putting a gravel in your tarmac, and that shit better stay together. Like, this was before free practice on Friday. This was before any cars had touched the track. This was just the heat and just how the tarmac was staying together and how it was reacting. And it was falling apart. One, I think this is ridiculously embarrassing for Miami. Whomever the contractor is, I mean, you got to do a better job. It's for safety reasons. And it's just ridiculously embarrassing. I can understand if the track is 15 years old, if it's used every single day, if it's got massive wear and tear, but we're talking a brand new tarmac, less than a month old, easily. The only cars and people have and weight that's been on there are the guys who made the track. Why is it falling apart? Why do these guys, what looks to be like to me, that they cut cost, they're using not grade one materials to make the tarmac. Granted, I'm not an expert in making roads. I'm really not. I'll say that now. But I mean, at the same time, you shouldn't be pulling gravel out of the tarmac before the race even happens. I can understand figuring it out after you've got, you know, 20 cars bombing around for, you know, however many kilometers, for however many miles with the weight of everything. I can understand a little bit of degradation that way and then you fix it, but it shouldn't be falling apart like that before the even before the race. Lando Norris is quoted to saying he thinks the city of Miami just made it up. They winged it on the course, on the track, on the tarmac, and how they put it together. And from the race, which we'll get to, and from just the reports that you've read and you've seen on the tarmac, I agree with Lando Norris that these guys just winged it, that it was almost a last minute thought. And they didn't want to postpone it. They didn't want to change it. And they just made it up as they went along. I mean, I think it's a horrible, horrible first start for Miami. But you know, you live and learn, and you spend the money, you lose the money, and you take his chances. That, ladies and gentlemen, is the hot topics for the Miami Grand Prix. So let's get into the race itself. Mother's Day, 57 laps, distance of 5.4 kilometers, 19 turns. Track temperature on the day of the race was in the high 40s. And we're talking Celsius, not Fahrenheit, ladies and gentlemen. It was a hot, hot day. They were comparing the race day and the practice day to some of the places, Saudi Arabia, you know, the really, really warm places. That's what they were comparing it to. They said it was a brutal race. They said it was warmer than Mexico in the last couple of years, just trackside, just radiating that heat. So the drivers were really put through their paces. This race definitely showed who was in shape and who was not in Formula One shape. To the laps, the bumps, the G-forces, and definitely the weather. The weather definitely played a part in this race. We're going to start with qualifying. Actually, before that, we're going to start in free practice. A lot of missed turns, a lot of oversteering. This is obviously a street course that not everybody knows because it's a first time. They're learning as they go. Relatively quiet free practice. Max Verstappen didn't run at all on Friday. He had more mechanical issues. So he got that, he was getting that dealt with on Friday. So he maybe did, I don't want to say he didn't run at all. He maybe did five laps and that was it for the entire free practice for him. The one main thing, Carlos Sainz in free practice hit a corner in one of the chicanes, super tight. And then he went off the racing line, lost some grip. He hits the wall. He slides for about, I don't know, 8 to 10 feet. And then the wall dips away. And then he met one of the corners. And he hit that wall doing 50 Gs. And that was on free practice. Destroyed the car. Obviously, his day was done. He was okay. He was quoting and saying that he had a little bit of neck pain just from the jostle from the crash, which is understandable. It's 50 Gs on the side of your car. He was able to get out on his own strength. He was taken to hospital to check out, but thankfully he was okay and he was ready to race on race day. And then he also did qualifying the next day, but free practice was by far the most exciting thing that happened, in my opinion, the entire weekend. Qualifying, no drama, nice smooth races, no big surprise there. The cars were still, I mean, they were fast on the straight stretches. They were slower in the corners and the chicane just because they're still learning the track, which is understandable. And a few of the tarmac issues, which we'll cover just before we talk about the race. But no big surprises. Ferrari topped the chart for qualifying for 1 and 2. Full lockout there. Red Bull locked out second row, third and fourth. Bottas was fifth. Hamilton was sixth. Pierre Gasly was seventh. Lando Norris was eighth. Unfortunately for Danny Ricciardo, I mean, he's getting better, but not consistently. He qualified in 14th, man. There's just something going on with him. I feel bad for the guy. He does either really well in qualifying and not so well in the race, or he does really well in the race and not so much in the qualifying. And unfortunately for him, this weekend was bad on both ends. Not to say that it's him necessarily, but I think his confidence is waning just a little bit. We all know the kind of racer that he is. So something's got to turn around for him. It's got to turn around soon. I hate to see the guy struggle. I know all racers struggle. All athletes struggle at some point in their careers throughout the seasons, but his seems to be a little longer than it should be, in my opinion. But yeah, hopefully he'll be able to come back from low qualifying. All right, everybody, let's get to it. Let's talk about race day. Race day itself was boring. In my opinion, oh my good Lord, until the last 10 laps, this, you could have skipped, you know, the first 37 of 57 laps. Oh my good Lord, it was so fucking boring, in my opinion. And in my opinion, here's the reason why. It was because, one, the track design, it's brand new. Some places were a little tighter than some of the racers would have liked or what they were used to. It was like watching IndyCar, man. It was like watching NASCAR, just single file, round and round and round. And oh, wait, they're going around again. And you're only gaining spots majority of the time when somebody pits for tires. Then you go up three or four spots. And then you just sit in that third or fourth spot. And then, oh, wait, you have to put new tires on. And then you drop down three or four spots. It was so incredibly boring to watch. The track itself, there's a couple places to pass, not a lot of space to pass this year. There has been rumors that they're going to change the track. They're going to tweak it like they should, in my opinion, make things a little wider, give these guys a little bit more space to pass, make things a little bit more interesting. But I'm going to bring up the tarmac again. It's the reason why, in my opinion, and some of the drivers also said as well, the reason why they weren't passing as much is because you had really good grip on what they call the racing line. So when, in this case, when they're lined up perfectly straight, in some cases, when cars 1 through 5, that's your racing line. You've got grip. The tarmac's a little rougher and you can get the traction that you need. Off that racing line, you saw when anybody tried to pass on the outside, on the inside, these guys were essentially sliding like it was wet. There was no grip on the tarmac whatsoever, which if you're a racer and you're doing 140 miles an hour around a corner, you're going to stick to the spot that's got the most grip. These drivers didn't have confidence in the tarmac. You saw some people take some chances and they slid out and they lost, you know, 2 or 3 positions. The rest of the grid saw this and they're going, yeah, you know what? We're just going to stay in that line. And it's like watching IndyCar or watching NASCAR. Yeah, actually NASCAR would have been more interesting to watch because at least they're too wide going around and around and around. In this case, they were single file going around and around and around. Oh, wait, and they went around again all in single file, like I said before. But it was a learning experience. I don't think it was necessarily the worst or the best experience for Miami to come away from. They know where they need to improve on the track. They know where they definitely need to improve on the tarmac. I expect next season, when you do the trifecta of American races, I think that Miami is definitely going to be right smack dab in the middle. They're going to learn from what went wrong this year. They're going to change the outline. I think they're going to change the tarmac. They're going to tear it up ASAP, get it figured out, get a proper compound so the cars can actually pass and take corners wide and just make a more interesting race go too wide, and then we'll see where they go from there. But oh my God, it was so incredibly boring. The only, you know, interesting things that would happen would be both Aston Martin cars, Lance Stroll and Sebastian Vettel had to start from the pit lane, unfortunately, due to fuel temp issues. Now, I didn't know this, but the fuel that they use in Formula One cars have to be at a certain temperature. They can't be too hot, obviously, or it'll combust and explode. But I didn't know this part, especially, it can't be too cold. So the FIA sets a minimum temperature standard for gas where the cars will run optimally and it's safest for the driver. Both Aston Martins didn't get the fuel temps that the FIA required until after what they call the grid close. So they can't join the race because they were about mid qualifying. So they had to start the race from the pit lane. It just adds to Aston Martin's woes this year. It's unfortunate. It's nothing that the drivers did. It's nothing that the technicians did. It was just one of those things that it could have happened to anybody, that the fuel wasn't hot enough. So unfortunately, you know, can't really fault them for that. But besides that, it was a very slow race. It was a very, I shouldn't say slow. Action-wise, it was a little slow. But the race itself and the course itself led to a lot of very close races. These guys were literally right behind each other, you know, doing their 140, doing their 210 miles an hour. That part was very interesting. But tactically and confidence-wise, the guys didn't go off the race line. They didn't want to lose that grip. And more importantly, they didn't want to crash because they lost grip. They didn't want to hit that wall. It's a street circuit. It doesn't have a runoff area in very many spots. And if they do have a runoff area, it's not very wide. So you're hitting that wall at full speed. Now, that being said, things did finally change. The intensity and the interest and the pace finally picked up after lap 47. But let's back up just a little bit. On lap 41, there was actual contact. It was an actual, I don't want to call a crash an exciting moment, but it was one of the one things to actually pay attention to. And unfortunately, the safety car that came out after that did affect the race to a certain point. So, lap 41, Pierre Gasly made contact with McLaren's Lando Norris. So what had happened was, someone's not paying attention. Now, I don't want to say who wasn't paying attention, who was paying attention. Gasly wasn't paying attention, in my case, in my opinion. That Lando Norris
contact with Pierre Gasly. Now, what had happened was Lando Norris's right front wheel made contact with Pierre Gasly's back rear end, and we're talking like this tire exploded. We had the wheel fly off of Lando Norris's car. We had the rim shatter. Like, and these things are not meant to break very easily. And this wheel rim just, we're talking like 12 or 13 pieces on the track after this happened. Norris spins out, his day's done. Okay, call in the safety car. Safety car did 6 laps with these cars before the track was cleared off. And we're not talking like because the car couldn't get off the track like other races. It was in a inconvenient spot. The where Lando Norris had crashed and where he had stopped moving, it was 5 feet from what they call a safety exit. There was crews there. He walked off the course. They got the car off in relatively fast time. Now, the thing that frustrated me the most is that there were so many pieces of the wheel well and the rim along further down the road that it took the officials 6 laps to get this stuff off. What I think they should have done, they should have red flagged the race, give it 5 minutes, tell them, sit in your cars, 5 minutes later, the track is cleared up instead of, 10, 15 minutes later, and then be off with your race. So when a safety car comes out, we've talked about this before, everybody has to slow down. You go to a certain speed, I believe it's 40% of your max speed, and then any distance between other cars gets tightened right up. So at that point, before the safety car, Max Verstappen was probably 5 seconds ahead of Leclerc. And when the safety car comes out, all of a sudden they're bunched up again. And now the race is on. We've got 10 laps left. They're right beside each other. We're talking Leclerc is like hundredths of a second behind Max. He could see himself in Max Verstappen's rearview mirror. That's how close he was. And they did this for 10 laps. Back and forth, trying to pass. Great defensive driving from Max Verstappen, just around the corners. A straight stretch speed, though. Straight line speed. Ferrari is still a little bit behind in the Red Bulls. Max was able to pull away. I mean, Max qualied third. He ended up getting past Sainz with a really nice overtake on the straight line stretch. And then he was able to pass Leclerc on the 9th lap. And very smart passing again. Really good, smart moves. Not risking too much, especially on this course, on this track. And then safety car comes in and the race is back on again. And for those 10 laps especially, you saw how much Ferrari and Red Bull are ahead of everybody else. They just pulled away from the pack. We won't use miles ahead, but we'll use laps ahead. These guys were catching up to everybody on this course, just battling back and forth, pushing themselves just faster and faster and faster. And while you watch them race, and that part was ridiculously exciting, all of a sudden we had a flurry of incidents and guys not finishing. Pierre Gasly, all of a sudden, he just goes into the pit lane with no provocation, no radio talk that anybody saw. He just pulls into the pit lane. Turns out from that crash with Lando Norris, he's got a broken rear end. He can't go the speeds that he wants. It's unsafe to drive. He just, pulls off. No yellow flag, which was great. Didn't slow the race down. Just pulls off into the pit lane and slowly ends his day. What I saw at the very end of the race, near the end of the race, was an unforeseen and an uncalled for accident between Fernando Alonso and Sebastian Vettel and Mick Schumacher. So Alonso was penalized for a 5-second penalty for essentially the way the stewards saw it, the way Fernando Alonso was driving. He essentially, what they're saying, he caused the crash between Gasly and Norris. I don't believe this is true. He was driving his own line. He's not caring about the guys that are behind him because he's trying to beat them. The stewards thought differently. They gave him a 5-second penalty. He never stopped for this. So when he finished the race, they just added the time, to his position. If he loses spots, so be it. If he doesn't, he just stays where he is. But the crash between Sebastian Vettel and Mick Schumacher, again, no safety car, no yellow flag, no red flag, which is great for race pace, but it also seems to me that it was just an unforced, uncalled for error from Mick Schumacher. He overruns a corner and just smashes into the side of Sebastian Vettel, who at that point, him and Stroll went from dead last. Now they're mid-grid. They're having a fantastic race. Mick takes the corner wide. He loses grip, smashes into the side of Vettel. All of a sudden, Vettel's day is done. Mick Schumacher was able to limp across the line. He did finish the race out of the points, obviously, because he had a I want to call it a defective car. He had an injured car, we'll say. He was able to limp across the line. But, I mean, besides the last nine laps, it was a boring race. It just went round and round and round. And I think that everything that had accumulated from the Gasly crash and the Vettel crash and all those incidents and Alonso getting penalized for what it is, I think it's because they were trying to make something from nothing. They couldn't get off the race line. They couldn't pass when they wanted to. The straight line speed was great, but besides that, not a whole lot of chance to do anything. So I think they'll take all of this into consideration. The guys will get their penalties. They'll get the points. They'll, you know, quote unquote, they'll serve their time. They'll take the lessons from there. And the race directors and the creators for the Miami race themselves, the race itself and the layout will also take that into consideration going, okay, they were trying to push here because of this. They tried to do this move and it didn't work out because of this. How can we improve the track? How can we make it better so we can get better results sooner rather than later so they can stay on the circuit, you know, for years to come instead of just a flash in the pan? Yeah, but I do have some honorary mentions for some of the drivers. Lewis Hamilton finally cracks the top 10. Very, very consistent race for him. He finishes sixth today. Unfortunately, he finishes one spot behind his fellow driver, Russell. George Russell has now been a perfect 100 for 100. He has placed in the top five for all five races this season. He's on a fantastic streak. Russell only qualified 10th, so or 12th, I should say. So he quietly made his way up from pit stops from other guys, and he ran the long race. He did a fantastic job, and he made up all those spots. So both Mercedes taking points, which is great to see. Mercedes finally had the first major upgrade of the racing season. It was to the front wing. It looked like they took some wave out of the front wings. So they figured out that less is more, that they're straightening some things out. They're kind of going back to where the old cars, not the old cars, but the last season's cars used to be, and it seems to be working for them. They're getting their consistency back. Hamilton was super happy after the race. Obviously, he would love to be first. He would love to win and be on the podium, but points are points. You're getting better. They look like they've scrapped some more of their high-tech ideas. They're going back to what they know works, what's tried and true, and what's going to get them the points. Ferrari, again, I mean, great performance from them today. Slow pit stop for Sainz, which is unfortunate. Ferrari doesn't usually have slow pit stops. It didn't really affect the race a whole lot for them, but they're really pushing Red Bull. They really are. They're making them do their homework. They're making them try to be the best that they absolutely can, and it's showing. Top 10 finishes for the race. We're going Max Verstappen won the race. Then it was Leclerc, Sainz, Perez in fourth, Russell in fifth, Hamilton sixth. Bottas, again, solid race, finishes seventh in the points. Fernando Alonso, even though he had that five-second penalty that I talked about, still got eighth, Ocon got ninth, and Alex Albon got 10th. So we're talking Williams finally picking up another point, another quiet race from Albon. He just, you know, made his way up the grid. Pit stops gave him a lot of positions. It was fantastic. I mean, I'm glad it's over. I'm glad they're going to take away and learn a lot of things. They need to improve. I can't go, like, the theme of the race is it was just slow. It was boring. It was a one-line race. But the next race guarantees that it is not a boring race. We've got the history behind it. The next race, May 22nd. It is a Sunday, 7 a.m. in Canada. We're talking about Barcelona. It's one of the fantastic races on the calendar. I will see you guys then. I'll talk to you soon.